Hi, Kevin McCullough, and glad to have you with us. Every day we talk about the breaking news, what's going on in the world around us. We try to give you some perspective on that, and I try to use the best sources possible, the best analysts possible. I try to be very candid about why I form my opinions about the headlines of the day the way I do. And for those of you that disagree, you know that disagreement is welcome. We always are glad to debate it. But I also defend very strongly what I believe, because I feel like it's important that I'm dedicated to the task of helping you understand the events of the world around you with great clarity. Clarity is the most important thing I think that I can contribute to the day-to-day debate of what is being said about what is happening and why it matters. That's why we talk about everything we do is breaking news, what it means and why it matters. Along the road, I get to talk to some really cool people. And every now and then, one of those people even write a book. And my next guest has done exactly that. She already has one New York Times best-selling title called The Intimidation Game. And that was kind of where we first originally crossed paths. Not long before, at least, that was published. But Kimberly Strassel is a member of the Wall Street Journal editorial board since 2007. She's written the Potomac Watch column, and she's been all over the world working for the Wall Street Journal, Brussels, London, New York, Washington. She's an Oregonian. She spends a lot of her time even in Alaska. So she's really, like, you talk about someone who's traveled the world, lived all over the world. It is Kimberly Strassel, but she's back with us at the Kevin McCullough microphone. And Kim, I appreciate you coming on with us. And I'm really excited about your book, Resistance at All Costs, How Trump Haters Are Breaking America. Welcome back.
Thank you for having me back. I love chatting. It's so great. You're such a thoughtful host, Kevin.
Well, I appreciate that. Why this book, Kim? What of all the things that you could write about, and you were like dog on a bone when it came to the Russia hoax. There were only like two people I would read on a daily basis and really trust what they were saying about Russia, and you were the foremost of those two. But why this topic for this book at this time?
Well, it was because of that Russia hoax story, Kevin, in that as I went along and kept reporting, and, you know, the whole time the mainstream media was out there saying, oh, my gosh, Trump is killing democracy and damaging institutions and destroying this country. And I'm reporting all this stuff that says, well, wait a minute, Jim Comey and Andy McCabe are using all of the full powers of our intelligence and law enforcement communities to engage in a counterintelligence investigation against a sitting presidential candidate during an election. Like, this is an abuse of power. And then, you know, the more we found out about the way that they weren't straight up with the FISA court and their use of the Steele dossier. I mean, this was all outrageous stuff and a terrible precedent to set, you know. And so, but I got to thinking that we were seeing that in every form and fashion, that there is this group of people out there. And that's why I call them in the title the haters, because, look, you and I, we're thoughtful critics, okay? Not everyone agrees with everything this president does on a daily basis. Not everyone disagrees with everything he does. But these people were committed from the minute that he was in office to removing him from office. And that has given them the mentality that they are allowed to break any rule they want in order to accomplish that. And so it's whether it's the Russia FBI probe, whether it's the Senate confirmation process, whether it's the impeachment, using it as a partisan tool, whether it's things happening in our judiciary, breaking norms in our judiciary, whether it's the media and their loss of standards, this is where the real damage is coming.
Well, and that's one of the reasons why such a book is not only needed to be written, but so important for people to read and to understand. Because in a historical context, Kim, and I think you said this on my radio show not long ago, that we are passing landmarks that once you get past them, like, we never go back. Like, and it's like unprecedented precedent that we are setting in the wrong direction, going quickly downhill with no sign of anything to stop it or pull it back. And I would make one small caveat. I think that Trump has tried in terms of draining the swamp as much as he can. But even in what they're doing right now with impeachment, it's just another way that this kind of covert deep state swamp monsters have tried to ruin America.
Yeah, it's scary stuff. And I have some stuff on impeachment in the book. But, you know, that is the perfect example of it. OK, let's just say, you know, again, I think we talked about this. Let's say a year from now that Elizabeth Warren is elected president, but the Republicans take over the House and the Senate. What do they do? Do they immediately begin impeachment proceedings? You know, because that's the standard that Democrats are setting here right now. Our founders understood that impeachment was one of the most powerful but yet serious tools that they put into the Constitution. They actually debated even not putting it in there because they worried that it would be used for partisan purposes down the road. We as a country have largely restrained ourselves from doing it, and we've learned some lessons from using it, you know, sometimes without the support of all the American people. I think that was one of the lessons from Bill Clinton. Democrats seem not to care in this case. They haven't really moved the dial, not much, in terms of the people who voted for Donald Trump. They do not have bipartisan support for this. And what does that mean in the future? Did anyone get to use it to remove and overturn an electoral result? I think they need to think really hard about that. We all need to think hard about that.
When you're talking about tracing this resistance that you, you know, obviously identify in the title, Resistance at All Cost, How Trump Haters Are Breaking America. What do you think have been the three or four most significant evidences of what you're arguing for here? I mean, we all can point to the Russia hoax, but have there been other things that you say this is just that damaging?
Yeah. So I would, case number one, I would say the Kavanaugh confirmation hearing. And what I try really hard to do in the book is not just say, oh, this is, you know, bad form, but actually try to point out the standards and the norms and the precedents that have been broken. OK. And by the way, I want to throw in here, I agree that Donald Trump is norm breaking, too. I think that that's mostly in terms of his rhetoric and his tweets and his demeanor in office, not so much from an institutional basis.
Sure.
But look at the Kavanaugh.
Well, he's actually gone out of his way not to break institutions while being as disruptive as possible. I mean, that's the thing history is going to have a hard time dealing with him on, because he's been so disruptive in terms of the systems and the good old boy networks. But when it comes to the institutions, he's done a very admirable job of trying to affirm them in what they exist for.
Well, exactly. You know, I have some people on the left that are already trolling me because of a line in my book in which I point out that actually, when you look at this in a fair manner, that this has been one of the more rule-bound administrations that we've had in a long time. Certainly a wonderful contrast to the guy we had for the last 8 years, who ruled via executive order and had his agencies circumvent Congress.
Pen and a phone.
Yep, pen and a phone. Trump, you know, and by the way, we're seen by Vice President Mike Pence, the transition committee. They brought in an amazingly stellar crew of constitutional conservatives who are running all of these agencies. And I also like to point out that, by the way, if you're an authoritarian, which the left likes to claim Donald Trump is all the time, you don't cut federal regulations by a third. OK, you don't let Americans keep more of their taxpayer dollars. You don't appoint a whole crew of, you know, textualist members to the judiciary. Those are things that are devolving power away from the administration and the state, and it's not what you do if you want to control everything. So, I mean, I think he's norm breaking, like you said, in that way. But let's look at the Kavanaugh thing. I mean, just in terms of what really happened, you had Dianne Feinstein hide information from the chairman of the Judiciary Committee, Chuck Grassley. You had members who released committee sensitive information in violation of the rules. You had leaks. You had the media running uncorroborated accusations. You had the complete overthrow of these important things like due process. I mean, the number of norms that were shattered in the course of that was extraordinary. And again, this, because when you let a genie out of the bottle, next time Democrats put up a Supreme Court nominee, is this going to be the new standard? These are the things I'm saying that are going to stick with us.
Right. Well, to be the devil's advocate for a second, Kim, don't some people look at what Mitch McConnell did with Obama's quote appointee going into the election year and try to say, well, our rule breaking's justified because McConnell didn't keep a norm that he could have if he was ultimately concerned about fairness.
Yeah, I mean, by the way, I think that there are some, you know, good questions about that. McConnell played hardball in there. And I think, unfortunately, what we've seen in the entire nominations process is just a kind of race to the bottom. You know, all of this began because Terry Reid got rid of the filibuster for, you know, some of the lower court nominees.
Right.
And then the appeals court nominees, because he wanted to push through a bunch of Obama judges. And then, by the way, when he set that precedent, you know, Mitch McConnell turned around, and when they said they were going to filibuster Neil Gorsuch, Mitch McConnell realized that if that was the standard that was going to be set, a filibuster of a Supreme Court justice, which, by the way, no Republican ever did to an Obama nominee.
Right.
Okay. But if that was going to be that, there would never be a way that a Republican president could appoint another conservative Supreme Court justice. So he got rid of the filibuster. And, you know, but where does it go next? Now you've got Elizabeth Warren saying she's going to pack the court if she wins, because they're so angry that they didn't win the last election. It's these are, again, standards do matter, because you end up on the path toward a mess.
Well, they're mad, though, because Obama also didn't use the time that he had. You think about the number of judges that Trump has gotten on the courts. He's reshaped the, you know, next two generations of jurisprudence. He's got 9 new conservatives on the Ninth Circuit, Kim. I mean, and I know that they've got like 27 judges out there, but this has been a remarkably effective, but doing it within the framework of the way he's supposed to, administration, in terms of reshaping American jurisprudence.
It will be one of his lasting legacies. And if he is reelected, I mean, goodness, the potential he has to reshape the judiciary in even more consequential ways is enormous. And yes, they are mad. And I get that, except for I think one of the arguments in my book is that just because you don't like a president, and just because you're mad that you lost, you know, in the past, when political parties lost, they took it as a rebuke. And they would go off and they said, okay, we failed to win over the American people. We need to go and rethink
right.
how we're going to pitch ourselves better and how we're going to bring a better message to them so that they trust us. We're going to govern effectively. You know, what are we now? The default answer for too many people on the left is we lost, so now we're going to change the rules.
Yeah.
We're going to change the situation so that we still retain power, whether we're weaponizing the federal bureaucracy against our opponents, or whether we're packing the court, or whether we're, you know, now on a campaign to get rid of the Electoral College. You know, this isn't convincing Americans. This is rigging the system.
Well, doesn't that have some large symbolism of the left, generally speaking? I mean, they stopped winning the arguments in the electorate a while ago. You could even argue that Obamacare, on some level, while people were dissatisfied with their health care, that and even though he successfully got it through, it was never popular, and the American people have kind of rebuffed it ever since. Not that they don't necessarily want, you know, there's going to be some people that are going to take advantage of free services, but when you're talking about, you know, business owners and taxpayers and people that had to buy into it, and all we've seen from every time when the left loses, all we see is them say, well, the system's rigged, we got to change the system so that we can stay in charge, as opposed to saying, hey, why are ideas so bad that we can't get anybody to support them?
Well, and could you imagine, just to add to that, Kevin, could you imagine how unpopular those ideas might be if there wasn't a media that relentlessly every day justified them and covered up all of the excesses of the Democrats? You know, if they weren't out there every day saying, oh, actually, Obamacare is just amazing, and look how bad it would be if we didn't have it. I mean, yes, and I think that this debate that is going to be at the front of Americans' minds soon, it's been subsumed by the impeachment drama going on in Washington and all the other things in the news. But at some point here, Democrats are going to have an E. And what that's going to show is just how far the party has moved left over the last few years. And they're those ideas. The thing that has been most remarkable to me, having watched a lot of elections, is that most of the time, even though primary fights, yeah, they're a little bit more to the right or the left where the general electorate is, these candidates always tend to leave themselves a way to walk back. These Democrats are not leaving themselves any way to walk back on a lot of these issues. And so at some point, they're going to have to stand up and buy them on a national stage. And I think that's going to surprise a lot of Americans.
Well, after 2016, I said that I thought that the bluer parts of America were going to get much darker blue, and that the purple areas that kind of went red were going to turn a little more red, and that the red states are going to get a little more dynamically red. And I don't see anything changing that. I mean, you have AOC come out and, you know, she's made such a name for herself being a first termer from, you know, the 14th district in New York. And I don't see San Francisco reversing policy. I don't see New York State becoming a Republican stronghold again, if it ever was. But I just don't see those conversions taking place. So where does that leave us, Kim? If the premise of your book is that the people that oppose one another are going to do so no matter what the cost is, and I certainly think that's the idea that the left is putting forward, that it's okay. I mean, look at Antifa. Look at the way their side talks about our side. You mentioned filibustering a Supreme Court justice. You know, I don't think that the Republicans have filibustered court appointments in my entire lifetime. I'm going to be 50 next year. I can't remember a time when Republicans in the Senate filibustered a Democratic nominee. But the Democrats have
a Supreme Court nominee. Let's just be clear.
Well, that's true.
Filibustered. Yeah, right.
But the Democrats have wanted to do it time and again. So, I mean, there is a kind of like no holds barred. There's no rules to the left. It's just wide open warfare.
Well, and I think that's why you see this polarization that you just mentioned, okay? Because the blue areas are getting more blue, more radical all the time, and they're seeking to impose their agenda on everybody else. And so in reaction to this, you see the red areas saying, stay out of my backyard, don't impose your agenda on me. And in fact, we're going to pass legislation making it harder for you to do so and everything. And we just keep going down this path. I do not necessarily see how this ends until there is, a kind of collection of people that are in the middle, as it were. And I think that there are still some who say enough is enough with the no holds barred and the breaking of the rules and the resistance at all costs mentality. We need to restore some standards here. One thing I do think is going to help, too, is when you get people in positions of authority who are there to say they're going to get truth out. You know, we were talking before about the difficulty of knowing what's going on in this Ukraine story.
Right.
And this is happening too frequently for Americans. They can't just get the facts. So, like, I'm very, very optimistic that someone like Attorney General Bill Barr, he says he's going to let people know what happened. How did we get to 3 years of a Russia collusion hoax? How did that happen? I think that could help a lot, because when people are armed with actual information, they're more able to make, you know, intelligent decisions about things.
Couldn't agree with you more. And friends, it's one of the reasons why I love talking to her. Kimberly Strassel, New York Times bestselling author. Her new book, Resistance at All Costs. You read her in the Journal. You see her on Fox News a lot. You hear on Kevin McCullough from time to time. But we're really honored to have had a chance to talk to her at length today about the new book. And I want you to get this book, Resistance at All Costs, How Trump Haters Are Breaking America. Kim, I hope a lot of people read it. And I hope it makes a difference in 2020, because we've got to do what we can to save the republic. My colleague at Salem, Eric Metaxas, wrote a book a couple of years ago, kind of playing off the Ben Franklin statement that, you know, if you can keep the idea of what America is, you can still have her. But if you can't even define the idea, if you can't even picture what those constitutional guidelines are, we're going to lose her. And it's going to come back to people saying, no, what do we really stand for? And I think you're going a long way to helping us think through this current era as best you can in your new book. Thank you so much for spending this time with us.
Well, you're incredibly kind, Kevin. Thank you.
All right. Kevin McCullough Radio. Stay with us.